COO Portland. Coming up is the Right to Survive program. Listening to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 in Portland. I'm Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Survive. On this show, we go to Ground Zero, Portland, Oregon, and report news and stories that corporate media don't cover. We'll bring the uncut reality from the perspective of the unhoused community.
This is Lisa Fay with Right to Survive Radio. R2S Radio goes into the houseless community, making their voices heard, speaking to individuals on subjects that directly relate to their daily struggles.
Yeah, we...
Somebody help me.
That's work.
This is not healthy.
Oh, man.
I am not wealthy.
What I do, have the power to break the chains.
Doing what's right, you.
Welcome to another Right to Survive radio show here on 97.0 on KBOO. And our guest here is Cameron Whittington, and he's running for commissioner of Metro. But we're going to talk about, as usual, our house, Right to Survive, have a houseless radio show. And so we want to introduce our guest.
Hi, this is Cameron Whitten. I am a community activist, nonprofit leader, and a candidate for Metro Council District 5. Thanks for having me here today.
And I believe this is your first time on our shows, and this is our 10-year anniversary.
Ooh, happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you. And so we're supposed to be doing the best of the best, but... each month.
That's why I'm here, huh?
But each month, something different and new come up. And so, and this month, I talked with you about your candidacy. And we don't want to talk about all of it, but what about the houseless community and the low-income community?
Yeah, Ibrahim, thank you for that. Mm-hmm. At one point, I was a homeless 18-year-old on the streets of Portland. I have seen some of the biggest disparities here in our society, but I've also seen the best of Portland. I've seen the generosity of people and organizations that provided resources so that I and other people like me could find housing, find employment, and ultimately define our own futures. And that's the work that I've been doing ever since. You know, my life calling is to be service to others because I've personally seen the difference that it makes. One of my earliest moments of activism, and that's, you know, how we first started getting engaged.
That's right.
First
that's
through
right.
The Occupy movement. I remember 3 days later, this knucklehead stole our idea. You know, we're out here camping in the public, you know, demanding justice, and Ibrahim decided to plagiarize because he's not creative. And on 4th and Burnside, all these knuckleheads started camping outside and, you know, putting up signs. I remember that sign. I loved that sign that said, Dan Saltzman is stealing food out the mouths of the homeless or something like that. A big, I can't say the A word, can I? A-S,
You can't say what?
The A-S-S.
You can't wait. You see, you can smell it.
Smell it? There's a big bubbly butt sign.
I think that was the owner of the land who did that.
Yeah, what was his name? Dan?
No, his name was Mike.
Mike? What was his last name?
I don't know if he wants me to give his name.
I'm getting old. Yeah, well, his dude named Mike put up that sign.
Michael, yeah.
And, you know, they were there. And I remember I was 20 years old, and I gave everything to the Occupy movement.
Yeah.
And I was so bummed after the parks were evicted and people went their own ways and the movement, you know, stagnated. It pretty much disappeared.
Well, we
but
stayed.
Right to June 2 was still there.
We stayed.
And then I ran for mayor of Portland, which I campaigned for, like, 6 months.
Uh-huh.
And after that election, I got my butt whooped. And I was actually a 1%er. I got 1% of the vote. It was hilarious.
1%.
But even after that election was gone.
Let's talk about
before. Let me finish my story. I got 30 minutes, okay? That's what happens when you invite me on your show. I call the shots.
All right.
And I remember I lost that election, and, you know, all the voters went home and people moved on to focus on other things. But who was still there? Right to Dream 2.
Right to Dream 2.
And I knew that I wanted to make a difference in this community, and I didn't know exactly how. But I saw that Right to Dream 2 was struggling. The city was coming after them, oppressive, trying to shut them down, calling them criminals, and ignoring their daily struggle that they were successfully fighting against. And so I went to Ibrahim, and I sat down with a bunch of other Right to Survive members, and I said, how can I help? And they were like, well, we need some visibility. You know, people know what we're doing. They're going to support us. And so I said, you remember this, Ibrahim?
Yeah.
I said, how about we do a hunger strike?
Right.
And Ibrahim, right. This knucklehead, said, you can do a hunger strike.
it was during Ramadan, so.
Exactly.
It was right on time.
Fast anyways.
That's right. Fast anyway. And I said, you
he's
can
too
do
skinny.
It, but they may not, you know, because houseless people go hungry anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they struggle to eat, especially now that they've been pushed out to the numbers, and the numbers is anything past 92nd Southeast, where there's no shelter, no place for them to eat, and so they've been pushed out there, and they stand in tents, and they still being swept. So Cameron went on a 40-day fast.
55-day.
55-day.
Don't undercount me, bro.
55-day. Finish telling about your 55-day fast for the house.
I got skinny. I didn't quite get the Beyonce body I was looking for. But it was an educational opportunity. I really got to, you know, being outside of City Hall, really got to see how that place operated, and seeing at that time when homelessness was not treated like the urgent crisis that it was.
Right.
And it broke my heart because, you know, now for the past 5 years, it's been homeless emergency, raising millions and hundreds of millions of dollars to help working families and houseless folks. But it wasn't already a crisis, and
right,
we acted so late.
They still doing the same thing, though.
They're
giving the money that they raised to the high social services not the low people who dealing with the houseless people doing the outreach every day. And so how can the low organization?
No, I agree. I remember completely back when I did the hunger strike. You know, Right to Dream 2 had 90 people a night.
Yes.
A night. For years.
Yeah.
So that's thousands of people served.
Right.
And your budget was $16,000.
That's it.
A whole.
Yeah.
A year. And we have these shelters, which you can spend $16,000 on a person for a year. So the numbers right there are so obvious.
Yeah.
And for me, it was always just tragic to see that the city would look at the work of Right to Dream 2 and say, there's a problem.
Yeah.
We are raising millions of dollars. And I believe working folks, houseless folks, they need and deserve services that they currently don't have access to.
Yeah.
But we are really ignoring a crisis on our streets, and we have cost-effective, smart solutions that are allowing people to govern themselves and feel empowered. You know, as somebody who's experienced homelessness, I understand giving people agency, giving them a hand up and not just a handout. And I struggle sometimes because I do hear elected officials say, oh, well, you know, I live in a house and I go to bed at night with a roof over my head and I could never imagine sleeping on the streets. And I don't want anybody to have to go through that. And that's a luxury to have that perspective. To have never had to sleep on the streets and say, well, since I don't have to, I don't want anyone else to.
Right.
That ignores the reality of, yeah, we're raising these millions of dollars. You know, when I was executive director of Q Center for 2 years, we had a drop-in space that was frequented by dozens of homeless trans women.
Right.
I'm afraid to say that I don't believe a cent from the, you know, current you know, homelessness fund, which I'm voting for, is going to go to support these trans women. The need is so great.
The need is great.
And the current way that we're using these dollars means that we don't have enough to help everybody.
Exactly.
And so that's why I've always had hope with the work of Dignity Village, Right to Dream 2, Right to Survive, because we are acknowledging that there are people on the streets. We can guarantee them safety and stability.
Exactly. And the thing with that, and this is the, I've been trying to get the attention of the Metro and City Council of Portland, that the new wave of people that need help are the gray hair people that's living on the streets, the LGBTQ community, and the emancipated youth. Now, I see some type of movement about helping the gray people and some LGBTQ, but what about the emancipated youth? Nobody know what to do with them. Nobody know what to do. But there are people too, there are people that say, well, my parents not taking care of me, I've been assaulted by my parents died, and I want to be, and I want to be mature enough to take care of myself, but because they under 18, they not allowed to do specific things, so they just in limbo. But we still need to help them. So that's especially about what I want to talk to you about, also about the high rent in this city.
Yeah. It's too damn high. I should campaign on that. Can't take it no more. Yes, where's my beard at?
That's right.
I just shaved my beard. I should have thought about that.
They getting high, and so, and so, what I admire about you most is that you did your 55-day hunger strike, and people came to me. Even the commissioners was coming to me. Everybody's coming to me.
You had to shut me up.
Yeah. And I said, Ibrahim, what you want to do? What can you? You're the only one that can talk to him. Can you tell him to stop? I said, only way you're going to stop him, you give him what he wants.
Exactly.
And you got that form. Let's talk about that
Remember
form.
Remember, the Oregonian called me a sideshow and a distraction and saying I was asking for three impossible things.
Tell him about the three impossible things.
We got two
things.
Of those three things
we
done
sure
in
4 years'
time.
That's true. Did.
But yeah, we had a forum, and you know, it was a regional forum, which I think was an important conversation to have, not just City of Portland, not just Multnomah County, but Washington County, Clackamas County.
Yeah.
Still waiting on you, Vancouver. But that forum, you know, did serve as a catalyst to the city really taking homelessness seriously. The next year, City of Portland, you know, declared a housing state of emergency. You know, then 2 years after that, we passed a historic affordable housing bond, and 2 years after that, a regional housing bond, and now we're looking at a $250 million homelessness services fund.
See what you can do with an inkling of an idea.
Yeah.
503-231-8187 is the call-in number. You have any questions you want to ask Cameron about the houseless and housing situation, that's 503-231-8187. And now we're going to go to a small break and listen to some good music that Lisa Faye had put on for us. Right Survive Radio on 97.8. And this is Ibrahim Mubarak. My guest is Cameron Whittington. I have him for another 15 minutes. He's so busy these days. I mean, he's outgrown me. So I got to run after him now. I was the busy person.
I want to do a shout out to my little creature who just messaged me on Instagram. Okay. Enjoy listening to you on KBOO. I love that I was just able to put together that it was you within just a couple of minutes after turning on the radio. Wow.
Thank you. What a shout out.
What I you am call, turning brown right you, now.
I'm not red, huh?
Yeah, I can't turn
call,
red. I don't
why don't
blush
you call,
like that.
Why don't you call in and ask us some questions.
Yeah, my little creature, call in.
Yeah, 503-231-8187.
Let me slide into these DMs real quick, see who this
and,
is.
And I know, I remember when I was standing outside City Hall talking with you, and some travelers had came, I think, from San Jose or Santa Cruz, California, and they said, "You're the hunger guy, aren't you?" And they took pictures.
The hunger guy.
Yeah, like the Hunger Games. You know?
Made it.
and I said, wow, this is spreading wide. And I think everybody who had the knowledge of being houseless before and made it inside should stand up for the people that's still outside. Yeah. Everybody that know about houselessness or know a houseless person, know the trials and tribulation that they go through, should stand up. They shouldn't just, I'm inside now, and that's not my fight anymore. Because if you don't stand up for the lesser person, you're living beneath your privilege as a human. If you're not helping people,
yeah,
you're not in it just to help yourself. You're in it to make a wave to help people. And I know you've been through so many organizations helping people, you know, here and there, and there and there. So some of your work, how has it affected you and the people that you work with?
That's a big question.
I know. I'm a big man.
Some would say. Big question. How has my work, every day I'm reminded how broken this world is. Yes. There is so much hurt, so much damage. Mm. But I also wake up every day with a little bit of gratitude, knowing that there are people, you know, on the streets, in the trenches, who are fighting to make this a better place. I do believe we can win. I do believe the arc of justice will bend. And that keeps me going. You know, when I did that hunger strike, those weeks after I ended my fast were hard. I felt defeated. I felt like this is impossible. I'm asking for impossible things. I am a failure. This world will never get better. And with persistence, you know, saw that positive changes do happen. I've helped to pass laws. I've, you know, doubled budgets for, you know, important, impactful nonprofits. And now I'm running for office. You know, I do think that one person can make a difference. It's going to take a lot of one persons to make the big difference, and we do have to find a way for us to work together. Ibrahim's been with me through a lot of battles, and I do think that we as, you know, organizers and activists, we can find ways to work together better, because I do think that the system is designed to separate us.
And in that separation, I see sadness. I feel it in the environment. I feel it in the air. I feel it in me. And every time I go out and see a houseless person, that, you know, sadness overtake me. But I got to overcome that and smile, because I know how they're doing already, and I can't go to them looking sad or creating sadness. Mm-hmm. I have to talk positive stuff to them, and they ask me, Where's all the Muslims at? Where's all the black people at? Why are they not out here helping us neither? It's black people out here living on the street. It's Muslims living on the street. Everybody go through different things, and they on the street. So they look for likeness. So where's the light? How can we get the likeness, something that they feel people feel comfortable with? Looking in the mirror, seeing them. How can we appeal to more Muslims, more black people to walk the streets to help houseless Muslims and have houses, people of color.
Yeah. There have been a lot of forums about homelessness and
But in them forums, they don't have no houseless people there. They have the same people there that go to college.
Mostly. But there are folks who are fighting for representation, and that's the point I was trying to make. There are people who are starting to stand up and say, you know, homelessness is not what we look at, and it's not like when you turn on the TV and you see a white beggar on the streets. Homelessness is diverse. It is working mothers. It's Muslim people. It's indigenous people.
It's indigenous people.
We really ignore the fact that economic and social disparities mostly impact Black, Brown, and indigenous communities. And and addressing homelessness and housing justice is a racial justice issue for sure. And so that's why I like to tell my story. And even, you know, after the city of Portland declared, affordable housing crisis, you know, back in 2014, you know, I said to, you know, Portlanders and especially white Portlanders, you know, we've been dealing with housing crises since the 1800s, you know, when Lewis and Clark first came into Oregon and caused devastation to indigenous people. And we started, you know, drawing, you know, colonial boundaries and, you know, denying people access to land and forcing them to boarding houses. That was the first housing crisis. The fires of Chinatown, the flooding of the Willamette River, the Vanport flood.
Yes.
You know, urban renewal. You know, we have had housing crises for centuries. These housing crises were impacting Black, Brown, and indigenous communities. And it was only when we started seeing the white communities in Portland being impacted by the housing crunch did we decide to do something.
Why is it too late? When indigenous people and people of color are going through some traumatic form of life, people ignore it. But then when white people do it, whoa, the world's going to end if we don't help them. Why is that?
It's empathy is a struggle. You know, one thing I want to recognize is that every Portlander has their struggle. And we all need to channel radical empathy. I need to be able to step out of my own experience and see, you know, there are white families dealing with so many issues, whether that's addiction or death in the family, student debt. Like, we are all dealing with serious issues. And I should make space for that. But I also need for folks to also make space for historic, systemic privilege.
Okay.
You might be dealing with debt right now, but guess what? You still have a house and an inheritance because my people were enslaved and made trillions of dollars in wealth for your ancestors. These are real things. That does not mean that I don't want you to have access to healthcare, housing, a good education, and a good paying job. You should have those things. But for me to have those things too is going to require a lot more investment that, if you believe in justice, should be given.
So we should have universal health care. We should have free education. Mm-hmm. We should have that when you're working and you lose your job because they go to another country or something, your unemployment should be compatible to the money you was making when you was working. So it won't be a crisis. Everybody be leaving. And that's what you call equality. Mm-hmm. Isn't this supposed to be equal rights for everybody?
Is that a question?
That's a question.
That sounds rhetorical, Ibrahim. You gotta do better than that.
It's a question. It's a statement. No, it's something for you to ponder on and think about.
Yeah, ponder on it.
To the equal rights.
Yeah, we need real progressive champions.
Yeah,
in Portland, in Oregon, and across our state, across our country, across the world, and the whole damn galaxy. So. I agree with you. The time for gradual changes is over. We need leadership that understands the crisis and understands, you know, we can't keep pushing to help just one person. We have to look at our entire system and realize that it's falling short of building the just community. You know, we hear politicians saying nothing will fundamentally change. And that's scary to me. That is scary that someone's saying, well, if I'm in leadership, nothing will fundamentally change. my life is not easy. I have lost so many friends to homelessness, to gun violence, to addiction, to, you know, medical care. You know,
yeah,
people are dying every day because we are failing to have basic level of services and dignity for people. And so, yeah, you know, we have work to do, yeah, as a country, as humans, to really reflect internally and say, are we really our brothers, sisters, and siblings' keeper?
Right. 503-231-8187 is the call-in number here on Right to Survive Radio on cable 90.0 FM.
Where
are
you at, my little creature?
So 503-231-8187 on cable 90.7 FM. Please give a call and let's talk to Cameron while we have him for 5 more minutes, folks, and he's off to the races. And that's the electoral race. The Metro Council race. And let's talk about rent and how rent cause houselessness to you.
Well, you know, we've experienced a significant digit increase in rent over the last 5 years. I'm not going to give the exact number, but it is close to 50% over a number of years. And what's happened with wages? Wages have not increased anywhere close to the amount that rents have increased. What does that do to the community? That creates a crisis. We were seeing massive displacement, increases in homelessness, and it's a systemic issue.
Yes.
You know, that's the reason why I care so much about economic inequality, because it's not just about do we have enough affordable housing. People are becoming poorer while the basic necessities of life are becoming more expensive. Transportation, housing, food,
that's medical. What I was gonna say, that's a big one.
Everything's increasing. Yeah. All of it.
But
and wages are not increasing.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So, okay, caller, state your name and answer your question. Caller, are you there?
Say.
Okay.
And I have a question for Cameron.
Yes.
When, assuming that you get the votes you need to get elected, what will you do in your seat at Metro that will ease the burden of houselessness and
Lisa?
Provide and provide some tools and mechanisms for houseless people to work their way out of houselessness?
Yeah, that's a great question, Lisa. It's good to hear your voice. And stability is important. We need affordable housing champions. And one thing that is clear is even with all of these resources, if you are sleeping on the streets, you are being set up for failure. And so whether it's criminalization, stigmatization, the sweeps and the violence, you know, at Q Center, you know, we served a lot of houseless trans women, and every single year we had to have a vigil for a houseless trans woman who was killed on the streets.
It's
devastating. It's devastating. And so for me, it is important to recognize that there are thousands of people on the streets in our metropolitan region. These are people who we are wasting resources with these sweeps. These are people.
Cameron.
Yeah.
We get that you understand this.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Put
stability,
your money where your mouth
stability.
Is. What resources are you going to use?
I'm talking about the issue of criminalization. We need to stop criminalization and actually recognize that we need to create policies that support governance. And so using the models of Kenton Women's Village, Right to Dream 2, Dignity Village, and recognizing, especially with Metro, Metro has 17 acres of open space, and we do have lots of houseless folks who are sleeping in our properties, and we need to recognize that we are damaging our environment. We are costing the public a lot of tax dollars because we are not finding sustainable solutions to allow people who are sleeping outside to have livable lives and stable lives. And so that's my policy, to change from a policy of criminalizations and sweeps to actually policies that are helping to have stability in governance. And that's using models like Right to Dream 2. I hope that's policy enough for you.
Okay, so when you get to the NIMBYs and the naysayers throwing their weight at you, oh, well, yeah, Right to Dream 2 seems to be okay. They've been around for a while, and Dignity. Maybe Kenton's helping the women, sure, but I don't want more Hoover bills. If you take a 17-acre lot and you fill it with houseless people, aren't you making more Hoover bills? I thought we were done with Hoover bills.
People can say that. The reality is that we already have Hoovervilles. We just sweep them up every couple of days and cost our community more, make our communities less safe. The reality is that we need to acknowledge that we have perpetuated an issue and we haven't solved an issue. I don't think that sleeping on the streets is something that someone should be relegated to for the rest of their lives, but having stability wherever you put your head, if you can have that stability, that will put you on a pipeline to wherever you need to go. Maybe it's, you know, you sleep on the streets until you can get into shelter, or you're done with a wait list and you can move into permanent supportive housing. The reality is it's hard to do any of those things if every night you're worried about if your stuff's going to get taken from you and you're going to get moved out of that space. And so I would just say, we already have these Hoovervilles. We just like to pretend like they don't exist, and then we sweep them when they're inconvenient, and then they come back the next day.
503-231-8187 is the call-in number, and Cameron is 6:31, and I think you told me you would give me a half an hour, mm-hmm. and you can stay longer if you desire. But we're going to go for another music break, and Cameron's going to decide if he's going to stay longer and answer.
I
got to
go knock doors.
Okay, Cameron got to go knock doors. So say bye to Cameron, everyone. And thanks for coming
on our show.
And I hope that you get elected, because we need people with experience, people of color, and people who know the truth in office, mm-hmm. just like you.
Thank you.
So let's go to a small music break. 503-231-8187 is the call-in number. Okay, welcome back to Right Survive Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. 503-231-8187 is the calling number. On the second half of the show, we're supposed to have Sarah Rudolph, but she's busy helping the houseless community, and hopefully she'll call in and we can talk about her busyness. But right now, I want to talk about the coronavirus. I'm saddened that my trip to Berkeley been canceled. I'm saddened that all basketball games are being played without fans. And I know pretty soon we're going to be on state lockdown, which is martial law. And in that, in this coronavirus thing that's hit Portland now, what about the houseless community? Who's going to make sure they're safe? Who's going to look after them? Are they going to continue to be swept? Because I get calls every day, been for like a week now, that they're not opening up shelters to people who just become houseless. But when they try to sleep on the streets, they getting swept. We got a caller. Okay, we got a caller. Let's talk to the caller. Caller, state your name.
I'm Julia.
Hey, Julia. How you doing?
Hi there. I'm doing all right. Thank you.
That's good. You have a question or a statement for me?
Oh, I have many, many of them.
Ask and I'll try to answer them for you.
I kind of wanted to start out by saying I went to one of Mayor Wheeler's homeless meetings that
farce.
Yeah, exactly. And it was really, it made my heart race. It was very perturbing. You know, they come out and brag to the public. You know, they're bragging to the public, and so many, like, older, rich homeowners, you know, white, obviously.
Of course.
You know, just sitting at the tables, and Wheeler's...
I can't hear you. You went. I just want to turn up the volume. Pump up the volume. Okay, there you go.
You know, and they come out and bragging about how every year they help 66 homeless people get 66. Off the streets, you know? and these people are buying it. And, like, you know, the people in the room, they don't know any better. They're like, oh, you know, they really are not educated about the homeless situation and what their trials are. And so I sat at one of these tables, and it was all, like, people well into their 50s or 60s,
yes.
You know, white, very affluent, and people who have never even, you know, they've barely heard the word. Homeless only comes to them, like, the homeless issue only comes to them when they see, you know, when their property value is getting...
Exactly.
Threatened.
Exactly.
And so it was alarming to me to sit with them. I sat at their table because it seemed like they needed somebody who understood at least a little bit of the issues, who has had exposure to homelessness, knowing many, many people who are suffering from this, from families to, you know, single... to veterans, to single men, to single women, you know. Anyway, and it was alarming to me how little they knew about any of it. And they were...
Yeah, let's look at the reality part of it. I think about 87% of the people who become homeless was like that before they became homeless. I have to testify to that I was like that. And I, living in Chicago...
I'm sorry, 87% who became homeless were what? What was that word?
Were didn't know about homeless issues and shunned homeless people.
I see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you know, when I used to walk down the street, they say, "Hey, brother, can I get a dime or a nickel?" I said, "You can get up early to ask me for a dime or nickel. You can get up and look for a job." Little and not even stupid and dumb was I. I didn't know how hard. And traumatizing, how tragic it is. Once you become houseless, it's hard, very hard and crucial to get on your feet.
Very hard.
Yeah. And so us that know that and became houseless and know that, it's up to us to give our own forms, not depend on the mayor to give these false forms. Like they say, oh, we have 66 houseless people. And that don't even put a dent in the number of people on the street. And how did you help him? Who did you choose to help? You know,
and he should be, I think that if he's going to put something like that on, it should be absolutely demanded that somebody from the homeless community or somebody representing the real, you know, to be able to present and educate the people, at least for, like, you know, maybe 15 minutes, and I just really did not see that happening.
Right.
And these people came away, these rich, white, affluent, homeowning people came away from that talk saying, well, I had no idea how many services the homeless are getting. Jeez, they're getting way too many. How much of my taxes are this, you know, is going to this? So they actually made it worse by having those talks. These people walking away thinking that the homeless are just getting a plethora of services out there.
Oh, my goodness.
And that it was terrible. And I just have to say, like, there were some misconceptions that I learned from them, from these people who had very little exposure to anything regarding homelessness, and their main concerns were, you know, trash, and obviously like safety concerns, like potential violence, but maybe that was perceived, you know, like they might perceive somebody homeless as being dangerous, even though they're not doing anything. And I know that they were under the assumption that a lot of these people are migrating here from other places.
Really?
I know.
We
and I, yeah, I work with families and children, like especially, and a lot from immigrant families to, you know, they're, the only criteria is that they're low income. And I've, in the last few years, like I've seen probably, well, I don't want to get into specific numbers, but okay, many of them are on the brink of homelessness right now, like with little tiny babies and children. It's just, it's unacceptable. Like this town, you know, is, we can't afford to live in the United States anymore. You know,
you don't have, like, to be rich to live here. Yeah, and I get calls constantly. I got a call, as a matter of fact, on my way here to the radio show, I got a call from a lady who said her son is about to become, you know, houseless. Can I help him out? And I asked her, were you helping houseless people out before your son become houseless? And I think that was an unfair question, but I get this call. It's perturbing that I get these calls constantly. I'm beginning to become houseless. What should I do? But if you address the issue when you see other people struggling, sooner or later you got to believe it's gonna trickle up to you, or you're gonna have the trickle down effect. It's gonna affect you. So
yeah.
So I believe that activists and advocates for the houseless community should come together and throw their own forms on or own workshop and tell the truth and let the truth be known. Seeing out there, just because you're a houseless person, don't
Can
mean they
you do weird.
Don't mean they own drugs.
All right, buddy. No, and I won't do it. I promise.
Hey, I got another caller on this line.
I'm curious.
Okay, well, I got disconnected. So, this is Ibrahim Mubarak from Right to Survive Radio on 90.7 FM on KBOO, and we're talking about the houseless issues and the coronavirus on how they're not really letting new people into the shelters because of the virus. But the new people who become houseless, they can't sleep on the street because they're being swept. So again, where do we go? We have her back. Okay, go ahead. We got you back. I'm sorry, we got disconnected.
I was wondering, like, well, the McKinney-Vento Act, I don't know if that's the proper act. I haven't looked into it enough. Like, I keep getting kind of sidetracked and into details. But a friend of mine said that if there was an abandoned government building that anybody could come along and use that building for the homeless, to serve homeless communities.
And that's true, and I heard that too. But with the things, the way things now, the way they going, we got some overlapping and talking in. And the way things going now, people will arrest you or whatever. I don't know, but we need to study our rights. And I've been saying that for the past 30 years. Know your rights. Know your rights. Know your rights. Because everybody don't know your rights. Not even all government agencies don't know the rights.
Yeah, right, exactly. The police.
I was going to say them, but I'm glad you said
it. Man.
We have a new police commissioner, and I have yet to meet this person. So I think I'm going to stretch out and get some feelers and see how this person stand on houseless issues.
Yeah, that would be, I think that would, the new
police chief, whatever.
Yeah, I think she was like in there for a while, right? She was already in there, like she was getting kind of tutored or mentored under Daniel Outlaw for a couple years. I don't know her, but I think she's at least,
I don't even know
there.
Her name.
No,
I don't either. this. But what do you think about this idea? I keep envisioning, and, you know, I don't really know put things together to make them happen, but I keep envisioning, you know how Goodwill is the thrift store that says it's a charity, but it's actually, you know, the CEO is like a billionaire making money off of the...
And United Way, I'll help you if you give me your money, all of that, you know. Yeah, all of those people.
But I see all over, you know, all over the place, Goodwill has those big trucks collecting donations, you know, with a probably like razor wire fence around it. So I was thinking, you know, one, like, maybe this is a good idea. What do you think? To have, like, get a really big, a big building to make basically a building that would serve as a thrift store, a giant thrift store like that.
Well, I guess Sarah Rudolph, who is going to be on here, but she ran into some complication. She have a free store where she they collect donations and stuff. And I wish I had the location, the address. I would give it out to her. But yeah, and Right to Survive get donations, and we go out and give them to the House of People. But the down low on that is houseless people have no stability.
So when they
go to this thrift store or they get donations from her, they're gonna get swept. And if they're not there, that's good stuff that we're giving them from the thrift store or this donation get thrown away.
But that's the thing. There's a thrift store on one half of this huge building, and then on the other half, it's kind of a shelter, or, you know, at least a safe space where you could have all kinds of things. Maybe some workshops going on for the homeless. Maybe, you know, at least a place to keep their stuff. Like, and the thrift store is run by for... the house of people. Yeah.
So ponder on that idea and think about Wapato, because that's the same concept that I gave them. Wapato got 17 acres of land, free land, and I said, why don't you turn those into tiny house villages? You can have an all women village. You can have a village with family and children. You can have a wet village or a village that people is trying to get off drugs and alcohol, and use Wapato, the building, as a resource center. They have $1 million kitchen that never been used. People can go there and learn culinary arts. They have space where they can have daycare center. They have space where they can have classes. Why put homeless people in a building that was made to put people in jail and traumatize them, saying, oh, we have to live in a jail. That's the new shelter now. No, use that land where people can govern themselves and become productive in the resource center, the building. That's the same concept, and I'm glad
you
brought
that.
Wait, so
what land is this?
Huh? Wapato is way out there somewhere that they want to turn into a shelter. It was supposed to be a prison.
Wapato.
Yes. Uh-huh. Look up Wapato.
And the land, right? Because when you're, I really personally think that nature is so healing.
Yes.
And balancing, and, you know, for people that might be suffering from some mental illness or even maybe some, you know, addiction issues, like being around that nature and having that massive stabilizing force, the land, you know, can really be, I think, you know, can really add to, like, the healing process, the rejuvenation, the, you know, just the whole learning new, you know.
Yeah, so what we're going to do about, it's nothing right now that we can do about the coronavirus, and I truly believe that the houseless people may be immune to this because they out in that air anyway. They out doing that anyway. But just in case they're not immune to it, what are we going to do to help them out that's out there? I mean, like I said, when it's cold and raining and snowing and freezing outside, people that live in houses go inside and turn on their heater. When it's hot and muggy and we have fires and it's smoky, people go in their house and turn on their air conditioning and live comfortable. But what about the humans that's living outside? What are we going to do about them? We can't keep turning people away from the shelters because they just become homeless since they go out there.
Right.
We have to do something. I mean, that's an oxymoronic situation. I'm just becoming homeless, but I can't go to the shelter. So I have to live on the street, but I'm going to get swept or criminalized.
Mm-hmm. I wonder how hard it would be to get just a mass movement of the homeless together, like go march on Salem.
I think we should. And we had a walk to Salem by Meg from Hazelnut Grove. I don't know how much impact that had on Salem, but we need to do that constantly. Okay, 503-231-8187 is the call-in number at Cable. Call in and ask me a question or state your concern. We have another call on the line. Caller, state your name.
Well, it's me, Wade.
Hey, Wade, how you doing?
Yeah, sometimes I go by tangent.
Okay.
But, dude, I got a lot of freaking experience with homeless, houseless. I can bounce in between homelessness and non with the greatest of ease and sometimes die hardness. A lot of family issues here. Okay, one thing I'll say is this. First of all, I want to get to some of the points that were raised earlier, and I'll go on my own trip. There was a whole bunch of money voted in to deal with this problem about a year or so ago, I think, and it was like, 6 more police coordinators, or another, you know, $75,000 a year job, right? And like, and nothing has changed, right? Except what has gotten worse. I want to tell you this. It sickens me to walk through the streets of Portland, not because of folks that are there. I've been there. I give them dollars, okay? Yeah, I'm going to throw money at this problem, okay? I'm going to throw $1 at that girl, $2 at that guy, and let them get a cup of coffee because that's not too big a deal to ask, and, right?
Right.
All right, now I want to do this. I want to go another place. You got a minute or what? Okay.
Go ahead, Wade.
Okay.
Because why are you thinking on what you want to say? You say it sickens you to walk down the streets of Portland and see houseless people. It sickens and saddens me.
I saw a woman crying. I'm like, on my way to Saturday Market the other day, right? Might have been Sunday, but okay. And this woman, as we were driving in the park off of Natal Parkway, maybe they changed the name, but I don't know. Anyway, I see this woman I thought it was a guy, but blanket over her head, just bent over, not kneeling, but like cross-legged in sorrow. I could just feel the sorrow. That's called intuition, baby.
Yeah. But listen, Wade.
But I didn't have a lot of money, so I just put like 50 cents, some dimes, shiny stuff, you know. And I said, hey, brother. And then I felt it was a woman. And I go, I mean, I didn't feel, but I intuited that it was a woman. From maybe the sob, it was a higher tone, okay?
Yeah.
And I go, hey, sister. And she didn't even pick up her head. And I just laid down the money and said, maybe this will help. And then we walked across the street, and she called out, thank you.
Have you ever been to LA and down Skid Row? And that's the most saddest thing that I saw. I had tears coming down my eyes because I saw rows and rows and rows and blocks and blocks and blocks of tent. And I went into the store and I asked the guy, I said, aren't you afraid of these houseless people? He said, no, because these people work. They just can't afford the high rent. So you got working people living on the streets. Isn't that absurd? So that's the saddest thing I saw with Skid Row, L.A. Are you still there, Wade?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm
listening. Okay.
You got somebody else chiming in. Hey, can I share this? I lived in New York City, what I call old New York City, before it became New York City in about 2001. But it was 1979, and there was many people on the street. I came from Reston, Virginia, just outside of Washington, D.C., and I had never encountered any home, houseless, houseboatless, any other carlessness. I met a lot of people. I had no idea. So I decided, well, somebody, I'm hoping a higher power, what I call God or Allah, you know, knew. So I would just give whatever change was in my pocket, and that could be 59 cents, and that could be $3.20. I didn't count it. But
or it can be 300, right?
Light up somebody's life, Mom. It's so cheap. Charity is cheap, okay? Charity is cheap, and it pays here in dividends.
Okay. 503-231-8187 is the calling number.
And now
here
I'm doing a trade
on Right to Survive Radio, KBOO 90.7 FM. If you have a concern, you want to ask me a question or want to make a statement, please call in. And we're talking about the coronavirus, how it's going to affect the houseless people with nowhere to go, and what can we do to help them. Anyone out there want to talk on this topic, give me a call. And I'm constantly getting calls that what can we do to appeal to Mayor Wheeler about the sweeps, because they're not letting new people into these shelters. They're not letting people sleep on the streets, and because of the virus, my trip been canceled to Berkeley, and I'm hearing that all basketball games are being played without fans. So what can we do to the people that's being affected by high price of rent or not making enough money to pay rent? What can we do to help our houses community? Please give me a call. Isn't this absurd? Do we have a caller out there? 503-231-8187. Don't let me be in here by myself. I have 4 minutes. State your price. Or we can go to a small music break and then your call. You're back listening to Right to Survive Radio on 90.7 FM on the radio dial, KBOO. 503-231-8187 is the call-in number. Is anybody out there with a concern on how we can help our houseless community? Anybody with a any suggestions? Anybody that want to let people stay in their house? Anybody that want to feed a houseless community? Anybody that have land that houseless people can live on until they get on their feet? Anything out there? How can we create forums and workshops and conference for the houseless people, by the houseless people, to talk about their houseless situation? Right now, 2 years ago, it was the fire, and people were surviving all the smoke, but they didn't care, or they didn't have any concern, or they was unaware on how it was affecting the houseless people. Now, you got the coronavirus. What are we going to do with the houseless people with this virus that's going on? They didn't bring us into this world. They didn't bring us into this country. They didn't bring it to this state. They didn't bring it to this city. They didn't bring it to your county. They didn't bring it to your neighborhood. But are we just going to shun them and put them out there? We have a caller on the line. Okay, caller, state your name and your concern.
Yeah, what's up? My name is Dan.
Hey, Dan.
I'm extremely concerned for the homeless population out there. I myself am not houseless or homeless, but I have tremendous empathy for the folks out there. And, you know, what we're seeing in New York City right now is, you know, people are being put to given some work to make hand sanitizer and sanitizer out there. And I'm wondering if there's something we could do to mobilize folks and actually give them a job to help make some hand sanitizer for folks and distribute it out there and actually make some good out of all this, because there's a lot of awful things going on right now in the world, and we got to figure out how to get creative and make some good happen, you know?
Yeah. Are you here in Portland?
I'm here. I live out in Hillsboro, but I work in Portland, yeah.
Okay. Right to Survive, have they meeting tomorrow at Joint, and I forgot the address, is on 82nd Northeast, and it's from 5 to 7. But I can give you my phone number to call me, and that's a great idea on how to make hand sanitizer. But
yeah.
Yeah, so my phone number is 503.
Okay.
839-9992. And let's talk about that more on helping the houseless people make hand sanitizer to pass around and to get them something. But I mean, that's not the solution, but it's something. So how can it's we how can we help them during this coronavirus epidemic?
Absolutely. You know, everybody deserves the right to live. And, you know, if we could actually pay some folks to help out and, you know, comp them some free hand sanitizer, keep hygiene up for everybody, I think there's some potential there. So thank you for listening to me. I appreciate
your attention. Thank you for calling in. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, chickens and viruses, this is the end of our show to next month, the second Wednesday of the month from 6 to 7. You listen to Right to Survive Radio on KBOO 90.7 FM. You all take care of yourself and let's help come up with a solution to stop houselessness. Thank you. Salam alaikum.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Unloaded Comedy, Laugh Yourself Clean, on Friday, March 20th from 8 to 10 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Laugh Yourself Clean presents a recovery-based stand-up comedy showcase, using laughter as a tool for recovery while shattering stigmas surrounding addiction. Again, that's Unloaded Comedy, Laugh Yourself Clean, on Friday, March 20th from 8 to 10 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.